This is a situation where people have a right to know about the quality of their fish, where it comes from, what it's made of.
Senator Murkowski loses a battle against genetically engineered salmon. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, May 24th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a skier dies attempting to descend Denali.
Once one loses control, it's very steep terrain and hard to recover from that.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
And by
Doyon Limited, celebrating 40 years as Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation.
Two prosecutors in the bungled corruption case of former Senator Ted Stevens have been ordered suspended without pay. The suspension comes as part of a new report on the trial. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, this is the harshest punishment to date.
The report runs nearly 700 pages and was sent to the House and Senate Judiciary Committees and Judge Emmett Sullivan. Sullivan presided over the case in 2008. It comes from the United States Department of Justice, the agency that prosecuted the late senator and ultimately reversed the conviction because of the prosecutor's misconduct. Joseph Bottini, still an assistant U.S. attorney in Anchorage, will be suspended for 40 days without pay, and James Gecky, now assistant U.S. attorney in Washington State, will be suspended without pay for 15 days. The two withheld information in the Stevens corruption trial that would have discredited the government's key witness, Bill Allen. The report says the prosecutors recklessly ignored contradictory statements from Allen and refused to share information showing Stevens was willing to pay for the construction work done on his Girdwood home. A report from a special prosecutor released in March said no charges should be filed against the two. That report said the misconduct was completely intentional. This one, from the DOJ, notes the misconduct as unintentional. It does not name any other members of the prosecution team, though it says one exercised poor judgment. Some could see the suspension without pay as a slap on the wrist. The two could have lost their jobs. Either way, they can appeal. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
During the final day of markups to the fiscal year 2013 budget for the Department of Defense, the Senate Armed Services Committee approved an amendment sponsored by Senator Mark Begich. The amendment places a one-year moratorium on any action that reduces the civilian workforce on military bases, which would put a halt to the proposed F-16 move from Eielson Air Force Base in Fairbanks to the Joint Base in Anchorage. KUAC's Emily Schwing has more.
The military is not required to notify Congress of its intent to move forward with a base relocation and closure, or BRAC, process when the on-base civilian workforce falls under 300 employees. In an interview earlier this week, Senator Mark Begich said he's concerned that the Air Force's plan to relocate the Aggressor Squadron to Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson would make a BRAC possible at Eielson Air Force Base in the future.
They're slowly picking away at it, so by 2015 there'll be so few people at the base that they will be able to qualify to basically close the base without any process of any kind.
In comments released by his office, Senator Begich says his amendment to the National Defense Authorization Act slows the process when the military announces any plans to reduce the on-base civilian workforce.
For the next year, they can't do anything until they show us real cost savings, not only today, but over a period of time. But also, this moves now and ensures that and directs the appropriators to kind of close it off by cutting any money that would be used by Eielson to move those F-16s.
Begich's amendment also requires the General Accounting Office to develop objective criteria for base realignment actions in the future. Last week, Representative Don Young included a similar amendment to the House version of the bill. Now that the Armed Services Committee has completed its markups, the National Defense Authorization Act moves to the Senate floor. There's no word on when that might happen. Senators will be in recess until the first week in June. In Fairbanks, I'm Emily Schwing.
A vote on the floor of the U.S. Senate today turned back an amendment by Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski to require a comprehensive study before genetically engineered salmon can be sold to consumers. Murkowski said she was disappointed with the vote on her amendment, which failed 50-46, but noted it was closer than previous votes on the subject. Her amendment to the Food and Drug Administration reauthorization bill would have required the same scientific and economic analysis to be done for genetically modified salmon as is currently done for other federal fisheries by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
What we're asking for with this amendment is, as the FDA proceeds in its process, that the agency that has oversight of our fisheries be allowed to participate and weigh in as to whether or not there's any environmental consequences that may come about as a consequence of a release into a marine environment.
Just before the vote this morning, Alaska time, Murkowski tried one last time to convince her colleagues to vote with her.
This is a situation where people have a right to know about the quality of their fish, where it comes from, what it's made of, and what I'm asking is for the agency that has oversight of our fisheries to have a role in this process. I urge members to support the amendment.
Aqua Bounty has developed an Atlantic salmon that would grow fast and make it to market size quicker. The company says it would rear only sterile female salmon in a landlocked area to prevent any escape into the wild. However, the direct threat to one of the state's largest industries has both of Alaska's senators railing against the plan. If approved, the Aqua Bounty fish would be the first genetically engineered meat product approved for consumption by humans. A Finnish man died from injuries he received yesterday skiing down Mount McKinley in Denali National Park. Ilkka Uusitalo fell while on an area known as the Orient Express, a 40 to 45 degree slope just below the 18,000 foot level. Maureen McLaughlin, public information officer for the Talkeetna Ranger Station, says his fall ended about 2,000 feet lower at the bottom of a 60 foot crevasse.
And it was, you know, like a tumbling fall. We've had a number of falls in the Orient Express. It's certainly a steep area. We don't get that many ski descents each year, maybe a small handful. But once one loses control, it's very steep terrain and hard to recover from that.
McLaughlin says Uusitalo was part of a team with a lot of experience in ski descents in Europe. National Park Rangers arrived on the scene about an hour after the fall and transported his body to Talkeetna. The accident is the second fatality on Denali this season. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, horse stables in Anchorage and Palmer take recycling to a whole new level.
We said, oh, hey, we can bring a truck in and drop off all of the hay that we were growing in the valley and then pick up all the poop and bring it back to Palmer.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Timing is everything. A mother who waits until her child is at least 2 years old before becoming pregnant again has a better chance of regaining strength and energy between pregnancies. Her baby is more likely to be born on time and at a good weight. So talk to your health care provider to find out how to plan your pregnancies and ask for the state's free birth spacing booklet. Take the time to build a strong and healthy family. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Alaska's lone congressman says transparency is the problem with, and not the solution to, good government. Don Young took advantage of the congressional recess to visit Sitka and speak to the Chamber of Commerce on Wednesday. Besides sharing his nostalgia for the days before television cameras intruded into the Capitol, the 40-year representative railed against younger Alaskans' comfort with government largesse and their lack of productivity. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Don Young told the large Sitka Chamber audience that he's 79 years old, feels 28, and acts 16. Wearing a flannel shirt and his trademark bolo tie, Young, who is the 56th longest-serving member of Congress in the history of the United States, said the modern Congress was more interested in the camera than constituents.
I will say truthfully, I think we probably have the least functioning Congress that I've ever served in. And why? Primarily it's because of this TV camera right here looking at me and the bobbleheads that represent the public instantaneously, and the response by the congressman. Instead of doing what they believe is correct, they will respond to, I call the instant information cycle. I have never been accused of that. I do what I believe is correct by the people of Alaska, and when you decide that it's not correct, then I'll have another occupation.
Young had other complaints about changes in Congress over his years of service, principally the abdication of congressional budget-setting powers to the president.
We have neglected our duty, and I'll be right up front with you. The classic example recently is earmarks. That's our job as Congress to designate. We have the right, and only us, not the president, to spend money and to raise money. And yet we somehow allow the president to set the priorities. And that's not good for a democracy. Does it affect any of you in this room immediately? No. It's a creeping, I call it like a disease that will eventually kill you. And a freedom that we had in the past will be lost.
Young, who wears his conservative stripes proudly, mourned the loss of bipartisanship. He attributed increasing gridlock to the fact that shifting toward compromise often came at a great political cost to members of both parties. He said more work got done when it was out of the public eye.
Any type of formal legislation, transparency and knowledge of everything makes it impossible to work jointly together to achieve a goal for the good of the people.
But Congress is not exclusively to blame for the country's problems, Young said. The federal bureaucracy has always been a favorite target, as well as more specific failings, such as a lack of an energy policy and excessive regulations. In Alaska, Young warned that residents had grown too comfortable, and it had affected our expectations and our productivity.
But 64 years, we've had good times. We're all pretty comfortable. State pays for this, the state pays for that. We all get lots of largesse from the government, federal and the state, and we stop producing.
Young said it was impossible to save our way to prosperity. He thought the lack of young people in the audience was telling. He did find one 20-year-old home from college and challenged her.
God has given this earth and given this state with the greatest resources in the world and actually the brain power to do it if we just have the courage and get off of our dusts and do it. That's our challenge, and that's your challenge, young lady. You may like what you have right now, but you're going to have kids someday, and they better be able to get a job.
Young is running for re-election this year. If Alaskans send him back to Washington, he'll be the 26th most senior congressman in the history of the United States. He told the chamber he has no plans to retire. "I'll do this as long as God wants me to," he said. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
It will be easier to get court records of juvenile offenders under a bill Governor Sean Parnell signed today. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The bill, sponsored by Juneau Republican Kathy Munoz, was requested by the Department of Health and Social Services to simplify intergovernmental relations concerning what's usually treated as very sensitive information. The files are usually shared between the Office of Children's Services and the Office of Juvenile Justice, but there's also a need to let the public have more access. Munoz says there are limits in the bill on what information can be made public.
The bill identifies certain serious crimes when information can be shared with the public if that individual is adjudicated a delinquent.
Tony Newman with the Office of Juvenile Justice says key to the disclosure is the actual offense for which a juvenile has been found guilty. He says state law has recognized the public's right to the information since 1997, but getting it has been a lengthy, complicated task.
There's a juvenile justice system to help kids who make stupid mistakes understand the consequences of what they've done, make reparations for what they've done, and then move on with their lives and not have it haunt them the rest of their lives.
The bill does not affect any victims' rights to information, and it includes in statute a very specific list of 7 crimes that can be revealed about someone. That includes crimes that are called offenses against the person, such as murder, manslaughter, or sexual assault, arson, burglary, pornography, prostitution, drugs, and weapons. It also keeps closed any records about juveniles under 13 years old. Munoz says providing information to schools, other governmental agencies, and the public also includes providing it to a person who was at one time in the system.
The legislation clarifies that individuals with a legitimate interest can have access to their personal information. And as we've pointed out, there are many reasons why that's important, whether it's applying for a student loan or perhaps going into the military or any number of other situations, having access to their personal information is very important.
Newman says since the bill passed, his office has already had calls from people asking to get their own juvenile records. The bill passed with no opposition in either the House or the Senate. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Petersburg will ask the Alaska Supreme Court to reconsider its decision on redistricting. The city council made that decision after consulting with its attorney in a special meeting yesterday afternoon. KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Petersburg officials were disappointed, to say the least, that the state's high court chose to go with an earlier version of the redistricting board's plan, one that puts the town in a legislative district with downtown Juneau, Gustavus, and Skagway. Petersburg City Council has repeatedly objected to being included in a district with Juneau. It maintains that the rural fishing town does not have enough in common with the much larger capital city, which is more dependent on government and tourism. Petersburg was happy with the latest southeast map, which had put it in a district with Sitka, Wrangell, Angoon, Hoonah, Cake, and many other smaller communities. After the court rejected that plan, the council called its attorney, Tom Klinkner, to see what more the town could do. The options were limited.
Party has in this kind of situation is to file what's known as a motion for reconsideration or rehearing. And this is a motion that's addressed totally to the court's discretion. And it just it says, basically, hey, court, we think you overlooked an important point in making your decision. Would you please take another look at it?
The Alaska Supreme Court's approval of the earlier plan was a reversal from its previous ruling, which found the southeast portion of that plan out of compliance with the state constitution and ordered it redrawn. However, in its latest decision, the court said it rejected the new southeast map because it had received numerous objections. That included concerns from Native organizations and communities that argued, among other things, that the changes diluted the influence of Native voters in southeast, contrary to U.S. law. While the court acknowledged the reconfigured districts may comply with state constitutional requirements, it said there was a risk the federal government might not clear the changes under the Federal Voting Rights Act. That, the court said, would come so late in the 2012 election cycle that a great disruption to the election process would result. Klinkner pointed out that this plan only applies to the 2012 elections. The court still has to decide on a redistricting plan for 2014 and beyond. Petersburg councilors were frustrated that the Supreme Court was temporarily implementing a plan that it could end up rejecting in the long term, Mayor Pro Tem Mark Jensen.
So 2 years into our senator's term, what do then if they redraw the map? I mean, how do they cut a senator's term in half for half part of a Senate district? I don't get it. That's just as disruptive to me as it is to, you know, worry about the a Department of Justice taking a risk, is what it says in the Juneau Empire. It says there is a risk. Well, being from Petersburg, I'm willing to take the risk to see if the Department of Justice leaves it like it is with the map drawn on the 15th.
Jensen was referring to the latest southeast map that Petersburg had supported, but the court rejected. The six counselors present voted unanimously to have the attorney file a motion to reconsider with the Alaska Supreme Court. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Alaska Department of Health and Social Services has over 70 job openings available statewide in nursing, social work, and child protection. There's nothing more important than protecting the health and well-being of Alaska families, so take the first step towards a meaningful career. Visit dhss.alaska.gov and click on careers. Join their team and make a difference every day. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
After spending $5 million on dozens of mining leases off the coast of Nome, Arumar Alaska Incorporated will begin a 2-year feasibility study next month to decide if their leases warrant large-scale gold mining operations. The company revealed its plans for the study at a public meeting last night in Nome. Arumar is a joint venture between South African gold company Anglo Gold Asante, the third largest gold producer in the world, and De Beers, the world's leading diamond firm. With projects in New Zealand and South Africa, Nome is the company's only active site in North America. Urban Berger is a geologist with the Arumar from Cape Town, South Africa. He says the sampling project will bring 2 additional vessels to Nome's already crowded harbor, including a nearly 150-foot drilling ship. The 40-day sampling campaign will drill in all 26 of Arumar's leases.
We want to get an understanding of the geology to understand where the gold sits and what concentrates it. We'll be going, 16 feet, collecting 350 of these drill holes. And then we can basically put them in our lab and we can study them quite detailed. Because if you understand the geology, you'll know where to go and mine the gold.
Arumar estimates the annual cost of the feasibility study to be somewhere between $5 and $6 million. The manager for the project, Gary Van Eck, says if a large-scale operation proves feasible, Arumar would begin the next step in the project, like permitting, the permitting process, to take advantage of the 2014 summer mining season. A waste heat-powered generator could save costly fuel in rural villages. The University of Alaska Fairbanks Alaska Center for Energy and Power recently completed testing of a unit called the Green Machine. Center Rural Energy Specialist Ross Cohen says it converts heat into electricity.
The Green Machine utilizes what's called organic Rankine-cycle technology, and what that means is that it takes low-grade heat from a secondary source, such as from the jacket water around a diesel generator, and then uses that heat, uses that energy to drive a turbine and generate electricity.
The technology has been employed by large-scale power plants and is used to generate electricity with geothermal energy at Chena Hot Springs Resort. Cohen says the Green Machine, developed by Nevada-based Electrotherm, downsizes it for smaller-scale diesel-fired plants like the ones that power small Alaska communities. He says the Center for Energy and Power estimates the $150,000 cost of purchase and installation can be quickly paid back with fuel savings.
We can recover all of our initial upfront costs in as little as 4 to 5 years. And then everything after that is direct cost savings to the community.
The Center for Energy and Power project is funded by the Denali Commission and other federal and state agencies. Large amounts of animal waste dumped into landfills and left to rot can cause environmental problems. But composting animal waste, like horse manure, can help keep land and water clean. As part of our occasional series on recycling, KSKA's Ellen Lockyer discovers one Palmer family that has come up with a unique exchange program that just makes good horse sense.
At F. Bar J. Ranch in Anchorage, horse owners clean up their horses' stalls the old-fashioned way, with a rake and a shovel. Mary Shields works at the ranch and boards her horse Desperado here.
And what she'll do is she will use her this rake. And that will sift the manure from the gravel in her pen.
Used straw and manure from the stalls is dumped into wheeled garden carts.
The carts are taken away once a day and we run them down to the manure pit where we collect it until we get enough that we're ready to compost.
Shields and I take a walk to the composting area behind the paddocks.
We stir it once or twice a week. We add organic materials like grass and wood chips to get it cooking even more so.
Do you know how long it takes?
That
yeah.
was a year. And it's quite fascinating. And you can see I've started my own little pile. I like to play. I like to experiment.
One horse can poop up to 50 pounds a day, she says. F. Bar J. boards only 30 horses, but it is estimated that Anchorage's woodsy hillside area is home to 5,000 horses. Do the math. And that much manure can do some damage if it is not properly disposed of.
and we have geese and muskrats and all kinds of critters using the creek, so we keep them clean.
Keeping manure out of the water table can be a challenge. While FBARJ's composted product gets used up locally on friends' gardens and by ranch projects, a Matanuska Valley family wants to use city horse owners' manure as a way of helping their Palmer farm meet its bottom line. And they've come up with a unique solution.
Yeah, so we have these great big heavy-duty bags. They can handle just about anything you can put in there. So usually the horse owner, we just come up and bring their bucket or whatever that they collected from their yard and toss it in.
That's Emily Longbreak with Country Garden Farms in Palmer. Longbreak's family grows hay and sodgrass on their acreage, nestled on level land between Matanuska and Pioneer Peaks. A lot of that hay is delivered to Anchorage horse owners, who in turn are looking to get rid of manure. She uses the manure to fertilize her hay crops.
So we said, oh, hey, we can bring a truck in and drop off all of the hay that we are growing in the valley and then pick up all the poop and bring it back to Palmer. So that's kind of how we started, and handling that much of a really gross material was a big challenge. So that's, we came up with a bag system, so the horse owners could have 1 cubic yard bags, you know, sitting in their yard, so it's easy for them to scoop the poop and put it right away and not have to have it leak out into the groundwater or anything. And then we had a really easy time just dropping off the hay and then picking up the bags and taking them with us.
The black bags attract heat to get the composting process started and are hung on lightweight racks for easy handling. The farm's soil is full of glacial silt and needs organic matter to keep that hay growing.
Just like old farmers used to do. In Alaska especially, the shipping costs for things up here are massive. So reduced our dependence on outside fertilizers and helped make people aware of agriculture in Alaska and why we need to come up with solutions to our waste and resource use.
Longbreak says it's all part of the carbon cycle. The hay comes from the farm and the manure comes back to it. It's composted for 2 years to let lots of air in to reduce methane gas emissions. Just piling up manure cuts off oxygen during the breakdown process, and that creates methane, a greenhouse gas. And composting manure keeps it out of the water table.
Water contamination is a huge problem. A lot of people are worried about about antibiotics and like herbicides or pesticides going into their water, but they don't really think about their animals contributing to that problem.
And another bonus, manure composted from the hay that produced it contains no invasive species seeds. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Emily Schwing and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Matthew Smith in Nome, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Peter Granitz from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline with over 700 employees. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation offers home choice seminars that provide tools for making informed decisions about purchasing and financing a home, and loans tailored for first-time home buyers. There's more information at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by Alaska Housing Finance Corporation.
Home, it's where you lay your head, eat home-cooked meals, and gather with friends. Home is where you grew up and learned about life. Alaska is home, and when you choose to violate someone by committing sexual assault, you harm them, and you harm yourself, your friends, your family, your home, and Alaska. No one deserves to be sexually assaulted, so make the right choice. Real Alaskans choose respect. This message brought to you by the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.